And welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show. It's that time again on a Wednesday evening at the 8 p.m. hour. I am the son, also commonly known as Eric Citizen Payne. Forgot who I was for a second. And you are there, lady.
You stuck out there for a minute? Kay Thompson, everyone. This is for Kay Thompson Live. You know, we're on every Wednesday with an exciting program. And so that you know what's happening and, you know, take advantage of the information that we give out here on the radio, Eric. And, you know, tonight we're going to be talking to Dr. Bo. This is Roosevelt Bo, for people known as Weaver. And he is a sprint specialist, a sports trainer, very, very well known here in Montclair. And he has also been trained people in several countries in Africa. So it's really, really very, very interesting. He's well known here in the Montclair area. And as I said, he is a specialist, and he's going to be calling in at about 8:05, you know, so we can talk to him about what he does. And he has trained so many people, especially in the school system here in Montclair and a lot of other places, where we're going to be trying to, you know, find out a lot more about him. You know, and I met him at the YWCA here in Montclair, you know, and he's well known here. And, you know, we're going to be finding out how people can, you know, keep up with their bodies, you know, and getting a lot of exercise. And we've been getting a lot of exercise walking, and he advocates that. So that's what we're going to have on today. And we are going to also be talking to the rest of our I can't think of the word. I was going to say the rest of our girls. But, you know, in talking to my granddaughter, we're talking, you know, we were having girl talk conversations early. But the rest of our people on our panel, and that's Wayne Gilman, former news director from WLIBBLS. And also what we have, Byron Saunders, and he is a historian, and he is absolutely fantastic. So you're going to be finding out, you're going to be getting a lot of information about a lot of different topics tonight that we're going to be talking, not only to Dr. Bo, but also finding out from Wayne and from Byron.
Okay, let's open up the phone there. Who we have? Is that 646? Is that you, Byron?
I am here. I am enjoying the sun and fun in Florida. I'll be back in New York tomorrow, but you know I'm down here getting a suntan, so I need.
Oh, that's great. That's great to have you calling in from down there, Dana. So I think we do have our guest, Dr. Bo Weaver, calling in. We're going to open his mic as well.
Excellent.
Let me get him in here, Dr. Bo Weaver. How are you, sir? My name is Eric Payne. Welcome to the.
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Fine, Bo. Glad to have
you on. Hi, how are you? Yes.
We've been planning this for some time. So finally, you know, did you have any trouble, you know, maneuvering the system in order to get on the air?
Yes.
Hello? You did?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, listen. All right, we're having a little technical difficulty right now. But, Bo, listen, you have been working with the students here in Montclair all over. And you started, well, listen, let me ask you what a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia. I attended public school in Atlanta, and I attended Henry McNeil Turner High School, which was located on the west side of Atlanta. And during my experience at Turner, I played football and ran track, and it was a very dynamic school. Many of our students attended Morehouse College in Spelman, but I was one of the first African Americans who left Georgia to attend a college in South Dakota. And there I went to so-called play football, but I became an outstanding track runner in the 100
wow.
meters and 200 meters.
Now, I know that you have worked a lot with students here, in not only in Montclair, but also all over. So is there any particular specialization?
I was very fortunate to be in the first Peace Corps group to work in Senegal, West Africa, from 1962 to 1965. I was one of the specialists. I was the assistant coach for the Senegalese Olympic track team and national track team.
So Dr. Bo, let me just interrupt for 1 second. For those of us who might not be familiar with you, because my mom is very familiar with you, I'm not. So you're a track coach, so we can just for those of us who might, and you worked all over the world in Africa. Is that correct?
That's correct, in West Africa. And I spent some time in Paris working with the Senegalese team and with some of the French sprinters. I'm a sprint specialist, and that's what I would engage in.
I see. How is this sprint training a little bit different? Have you worked with, have you trained many Olympic athletes? How is the life of a sprint trainer, a coach?
Well, basically, we are the same, but I just specialize in 100 meters, 200 meters, and 400 meters. And, you know, I run myself, sprinter, I run the 100 meters and 200 and relays. In college, I was the Midwestern 100-yard dash champion that consists of Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota.
Wow.
Back in 1958.
Let me just open it up. We also want to welcome our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Wayne, were you a track runner in high school?
Yes, I was. I wish I could say that I had half the energy that I once had. In high school and in college, but you know, I'm impressed just listening to this gentleman, and you know, very often I question whether those people that you see in the Olympics, are they just natural, a natural gift to run? Because I know we used to practice back in the day, and whenever I see someone like Usain Bolt, it's just, you know, off the charts as far as I'm concerned. I mean, this man has tremendous talent and energy. I mean, is that something that he was born with, or do you just rise to that level after years of training?
Well, I think in many cases, it's developmental. Bolt was an outstanding sprinter. But as he developed with mechanics and technique, he became a superstar. Many of the young people I work with, they have the ability to run, but it's the technique, mechanics. And one of the areas that I focus on a great deal is teaching sprinters to learn to relax in a race. Mm. Now, I'm 80 years old, and I'm still running the 100 meters.
Wow.
I was at the Penn Relays. I came in third. Last week I won the 100 meters
what?
And the 50 meters at the state championship in Connecticut. So I work out 2 times a day.
Oh, my God.
Wow. 80. When Kay said 1858, I said, excuse me. But, you know, at 80, that's remarkable. I mean, that's really commendable.
Yeah.
Byron, were you a track runner?
Yes, I ran track in Washington, D.C., and when I was in junior high school, I did place fourth in the all-city finals in the 50-yard dash. I got a little speed on me, but at 80 years old, I'm like, I'm trying to think, what is your time in the 100? Embarrass me, because I probably can't even keep up, but I am just amazed that an 80-year-old person who can still out there.
Well, I've been, again, it's a very amazing situation.
Yes.
My times have been around 15 flat.
Yes. Yeah.
And in one situation, I was 14.9. So, you know, it's a lot of dedication. I get up in the morning and go to the YMCA, and I begin my training by going into the water, and I do my sprint training in the water.
Right.
And then then I do weights and so on. In the evening, I go to the park and do a regular track sprint workout, 100 meters and 150.
That's amazing. Yes.
Byron, don't even try. You wouldn't even laugh with Dr. Bowe. You know, you should see him on the track. He works with those kids. Those kids love him, and the adults also. You're not going to be able to keep up with him.
I know I wouldn't. I'm already impressed. Oh my goodness,
Dr. Bowman.
I have a quick question, Byron. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I just want to ask the doctor. What sort of diet do you have?
Well, I have a very rigid type of diet. I say that because I eat a lot of vegetables in small portion, very little red meat. Chicken, fish, turkey, and sometime lamb. But basically, a lot of nuts also, and fruits. And I keep my weight down, and I drink a lot of water. It's very important to drink a lot of water.
Yes.
So I've been, you know, again, very blessed from a physical perspective because I go to my doctor every 6 months, and sometimes I'm amazed at my blood work, but they tell me that my blood and, you know, I try to maintain, you know, the balance.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, running track, and I did track in high school, with 100 meters, 220, but now it's 200 meters, 220 yards back then. And then, of course, broad jump. Broad jump as well as high, not the high jump, but the pole vault. And I trained with the University of Maryland track team going through high school. But that's a very rigid, rigid diet and routine that you have, Doc. And, I mean, for 80 years old, you got it going on. I hope I can grow up and be just like you.
Well, you know, it's important, I think, that as African-American males, I try to inspire young African-American males to really look at their health situation and be very conscious and cognizant of the fact that eating the proper food, working out, getting your rest, make a world of difference in terms of your psychological and physical development.
Right, right.
Now,
so you, as a college student, you ran into Drake relays probably out there in Kansas because you were out there. Yeah, I know.
Absolutely.
I went to University of Kansas.
Freezing.
So yes. Freezing, right, in the Drake relays.
What about the 10 relays, Dr. Bowe?
Well, I've been running there for the last, 40 years, actually.
Wow.
I started when I was 40, and I was on relay teams, and Bill Cosby was on one relay team, and I remember he ran the second leg, and I ran the second leg, and I blew by him so fast, it was amazing, but it's been fun, you know. I think that enjoying and making this fun is the important factor.
And when did you start to go to Africa, and which countries did you go to?
Well, actually, I was in Dakar, Senegal. Dakar is the capital of Senegal. I was there 3 years, but during the period I was there, I also worked in the Ivory Coast, Côte d'Ivoire, as we say in French, and I worked in Niger, the northern part of, well, actually, it's very. So those particular assignments was when I was off in Dakar, and I would go to those countries to work with sprinters there, and it was really a nice experience.
Mm-hmm. Were you hired to go to these countries to teach your technique?
It was a part of the Peace Corps assignment. I was one of the few Peace Corps volunteers that worked in three different countries.
I see. Mm-hmm. And which
and
three
then
were
after
they?
After completing my Peace Corps tour, I came to Boston, worked as a social worker, and eventually got a scholarship to go to Harvard Graduate School of Education. And someone heard that I had coached in Africa, and I was asked to coach the sprinters at Harvard. And it was an amazing experience because the young men came from inner cities and different backgrounds, but they were quite outstanding athletes, but they were super intellectuals.
Okay.
And did that make a difference?
In terms of what? The intellectual part?
Books and, you know, getting into a very physical training.
Well,
if you
I
had
think
to,
it makes a difference.
Let me just ask this.
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Of the African countries that you've been in, where would you say the fastest runners come from?
Well, it's very difficult to say. It depends on where they train and how they train. However, the West Africans are sprinters, like Senegal, Guinea, Nigeria, Ghana. The East Africans, Somali, Kenya, they are usually distance runners. They have a different body makeup. And you find that sprinters are usually have a large muscle mass and short or sometimes tall, but tremendous turnover. We call it turnover, how fast they can turn over as they run. Where the distance runner, they have tremendous long, we call it strides, where they the distance between each leg when they run.
And that's unique to you know, people in the different African countries, is that it? I'm just wondering if
yes,
it's also,
for example, the Kenyans, Somalians, and people from North Africa, many of them live in the mountain area where they run with the air is so powerful that, you know, when, for instance, I was in Costa Rica walking up in the mountains, I fell out almost because the air was so amazing. Where sprinters usually short, fast, and it's interesting because growing up in Georgia, we all thought we were super fast. We never really trained. If I had trained like I do now, I don't know where I would have gone with my track because we call it being natural born fast, you know. So I was very blessed when I was younger. I could outrun most of the bigger boys in my community.
That's amazing, amazing. I gather you have to have a tremendous amount of discipline in which to maintain a certain regimen to be so successful at this over the years, you know.
Well, it's interesting, you're right, because I think, you know, growing up in Georgia, working on the farm, getting up early in the morning and picking watermelons and so on, you know, you had a responsibility. But the other part of it is that I wanted to be a Marine. So I joined the Marine Reserve and went through boot camp And I think the discipline of the Marine Corps had a lot to do with it, even though I was hoping to make a career, and then I realized that wasn't for me. It's a regiment, you know.
Right.
You get up in the morning, you train, you have to look at your diet, you have to look at, okay, like tomorrow morning, I go to the swimming pool, and I run in the water, and I do weights and so on. Then in the afternoon, I go to the track and do speed work. So I gotten so used to it, it's become a natural process.
Do you have many 80-year-olds alongside you when you do these events and even when you're just working out?
Well, working out, no. And in the events, it's kind of interesting what's happening in the Masters. As you get past 65, you see less and less African-American men. The best sprinters are usually Caucasian, and they're from Texas because they train year-round in the hot climate. But as we get older, there are less and less African-American. So when I travel throughout the country, I see very few black men participating after the age of 65.
And what do you attribute that to?
Well, I think a loss of interest. They become involved in other activities, and the discipline. You know, it's not easy to get up in the morning and work out, and it's not easy. It's really takes a lot of of motivation. And I guess since I was a young boy in Georgia, I've been running. And I want to continue. As long as I can move, I want to run. It's a lot of fun. And the other part of it is the socialization. You meet so many interesting people. I don't drive to these long trips anymore, so I take the train. The people I meet on the train are just incredible. And interesting enough, I was running on the beach in Martha's Vineyard, and I heard someone say, Dr. Speed, Bo Weaver. And it was amazing. So many people saw me run at the Penn Relays. But and then while I was there, I met little boys on the beach, and I trained them to sprint. It's just been fun.
Dr. Bo, do you currently work with adults now, training adults? Or?
Well, I work with adults, and I start with the youngest at 5 years of age. And I work with anyone, but I used to train some of the New York Giants. I did speed work. That's how I got the name Dr. Speed. One of the football players from the Giants started calling me Dr. Speed.
Which one, if you don't mind me asking?
Dave Meggett.
Oh, okay.
Linebacker.
And how can people get in contact?
No,
with
he
Dr.
was.
Ball, if they want to.
He was I forgot. He played wide receiver or something.
Wide receiver, yes. Okay.
How would people contact you, Dr. Bo, if they wanted to get in touch with you to work with you?
Well, I'm located in Montclair. I'm at what you call Brookdale Park in Montclair. Usually every day from 4 to 7. My number for contact is 973-441-8649.
Okay. That's 973-441-8649. If you want to contact Dr. Roosevelt Bo Weaver, sprint specialist, track coach, we want to thank you again for calling in and joining us, sir. It's an honor to have you on. And we'll be talking to you again soon. Hopefully, we can come to one of your track meets there when you're blazing. I know that you probably inside. You said a lot of the brothers don't compete after a certain age, but I kind of feel like you never get tired of beating the white boys, Dr. Bo. That's kind of
well,
message.
I tell you, it's a pleasure when I run against people because one thing I want to say is interesting because I sometimes wear a Harvard sweater. And people ask me, did you really go to Harvard? the notion that you can't be smart and be a good athlete somehow.
Yeah.
And so I really want to make a difference when I run against these people. So thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
It's my pleasure, really.
Thanks, folks.
All right, all right. That was great talking to Dr. Bo, still sprinting at 80 years old. Gives
my
brother makes us feel like an underachiever.
I'll admit to that.
I kind of thought you all would enjoy this, being as you're getting older.
Right.
I need all the help I can get. I'll tell you that, Kay. I say that unabashedly, especially with these young girls out here. I'm going to start running tomorrow.
When you consider the alternative to getting older, like my mom always says, then you just take it.
I've heard that.
Let's move into the news. I mean, to me, I kind of checked out a little bit later on in the day. So, you know, it's a 24-hour, minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour breaking news cycle with number 45. He's the gift that keeps on giving, and I'm just worried about the type of gift. I'm just worried about the type of giving he's going to be giving America.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that your girl, Byron, your girl, Kathy Griffith, she might have stepped into, you know, I jokingly said to my sister when we were talking about this today that I love white folks because you can always depend on them to take it to the 900th degree.
Of course.
Take it all the way to the limit. And I was
now,
thinking,
she didn't think
you know,
she was going to get away with that, yes. You know.
I was thinking freedom of speech. They didn't say nothing when Ted Nugent was talking about Obama should be beheaded. Here I am trying to stick up for the woman, and I saw the picture. I was like, oh, doggone it, Kathy.
Yes.
Making it hard.
Yeah, that was...
Well, CNN wanted to shave its budget a little bit, so that's why they, you know.
Yeah, but it was
a
little
bit. I think that thing
would have
just hung in the wind if that hadn't happened.
No. You think so when you saw the picture?
No, I didn't see the picture, but, I mean, the deal is that, I understand the uproar and, you know, the anger behind it. I mean, a lot of people have all but said, you know, this man needs to be, and they've said things about Obama the same way. But, you know, again, you, Eric, pointed out accurately freedom of speech and that idiot, that flag-waving Republican entertainer. I can't even say that he's in that. He's like a freaking hillbilly as far as I'm concerned. Ted Nugent. I don't get it with him. I don't get it with Sean Hannity. And I'm just surprised. Only now Americans are calling for impeachment proceedings. The numbers are swelling now, you know.
Before we jump off into that, but I'm saying, Byron, have you seen this picture?
Yes, I've seen the picture that she was holding the. You know, it's obscene.
Yeah.
It really isn't. It's in poor taste. It shouldn't have been even given the 10 minutes that it was given and, you know, notoriety. And, she took it to
what
the limit.
What she did, let me get in here. What she did, she's a comedian, number one. But she had a head, and she was holding it, I think, by the hair. And the head was all bloody. It was not only in poor taste. You have to be maybe a little nuts to it. To hold something like that up by the hair, saying that it was the Trump.
Well,
I can't even say it.
She just held it up. I mean, in the video, she holds it up. But,
all bloody.
But and I think like you think, Wayne. But and Byron, you were cut off in mid thought. What were we gonna? You want to finish what you were gonna say?
I was just saying that it was in seriously in poor taste and. Should not have been given the 10 minutes of, you know, fame that it was given. Now that it's out there, you know, I agree with you, Eric. White people have a tendency to take that to the extreme, and she did. And so
I'm agreeing with you, Wayne. You know, freedom of speech. But if you see the picture, it does take it to
it
is
it
in
was,
poor taste.
It is
upsetting. Hold on for a minute. It was in poor taste. And also, too, what I think, you know, Kathy Griffin, you know, she's one of those comedians who's always looking to top herself and push the limit and get attention. But I think that something like that, unfortunately, gives them a right to stand on their high horse, right? Because then they all come back, and righteously so, to a certain degree, obviously, right? They all can stand there and say, see what this liberal comedian did, and it's okay for that, you know, and like they're doing, you know, because they lie, you know, and they say if that had been done about Obama, you know, the uproar would have been, well, it was talked about on Obama, and the load of language that they all used, lock and load, Sarah Palin talking about we need to target, all that type of suggestive imagery, words that they used to use. And here she did with the same thing, with but it was an image, which was really a lot more gruesome. It really looked pretty real. And secondly, to me, I'm like, had there been some rash of beheadings? You know, I'm wondering where that came from. You know, I could see if recently in the news there was a rash of beheadings. So to get on topic, the news topic, maybe that might have been why they thought that was a good idea. But it just seems to, you know, come out of nowhere, you know, and just to do that, just to get some attention, is pretty crazy.
I think what
you wanted to say, Ron.
I wanted to say that I think that she has killed the rest of her career. You know, I think that that was in such ugly, ugly case. Even under the circumstances, you know, I mean, I don't like Trump as much as a whole lot of other people, but to do something like that, in other words, what she did, everyone, you didn't see the pictures in the paper or on the media, like radio, not on the radio, but on television, was that she was holding up, I think, by the hair, which looked like a head, all right, and it was bloody. It was as if it had been recently cut, and it was all bloody, and she was holding it up and standing next to it. And then I don't even know what she said at the time because of the fact that I was so shocked to see such a thing. You know, you can get angry, but this was a disgusting display of, you know, trying to make a point, really. And I think she will pay a big price for it, however.
Well, she already lost the CNN job.
Yeah, but I'm not endorsing Trump by any means. But that goes just a little bit far, too far, in trying to make an appointment.
Yeah, so. I understand how you feel. And Kay, I didn't get a chance to see the picture. I think it's been taken down. But all I want to say, I juxtapose nonsense like that with the caricatures of a Barack Obama looking like an ape. And swinging from some tree, his lifeless body, you know, back in the day when they wanted to make a point about, well, we don't need this man in office, you know?
Yeah.
It's the same thing about the birth movement and all the twisted lies that come out of the government. I see no difference. I'm sorry, it's gory. And again, I didn't witness this. Maybe it's the blood that makes it look despicable. But, you know. Wrong is wrong regardless on both sides, and that's it. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah, Wayne, I mean, when you see the picture, you'll see the extent to why everybody is so extremely uproared. But you're right. You're exactly right. Wrong is wrong.
Yep.
And they opened up the can of worms, didn't they? They opened up the can of worms when they like you said, doing those same the caricatures of Barack Obama and the guy that had the effigy. Down in Florida, the guy who was supposed to be a pastor, actually, who had the effigy of Barack Obama hanging in front of his church. So they opened up these can of worms, and then when somebody comes and outdoes them, usually one of their own, right? Somebody comes and outdoes them, people want to get upset, you know? And you know, I joke and say that, you know, my white folks, my white people, my friends, but, you know, I think that, you know, she decided to go there just like many of them decide to go there. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I think her reasoning for doing it is to draw attention to herself and not really to make a political statement, right? It's to shock everybody, and everybody talks about Kathy Griffin, not about really what Trump is doing. And also, you know, it was something that didn't need to be said. You know, it's kind of envision two little the consciences on her shoulder, and one being Michelle Obama, say, "Now, Kathy, go high. When they go low, we go high." And the other one is Kathy herself saying, "At the heck with it. Let's do it." So I think that kind of seems like the situation, but that's a distraction, like you said. That's a distraction to, like, Jared Kushner opening up his back channels to want to open up back channels to the Kremlin. And these guys have the nerve to want to form a war room to respond to all this negative press. And one thing that came to mind to me was, like, who are you forming a war? Who are you going to war against? You're going to war against the intelligence agency? You're going to war against the media? I mean, it's like they're forming a war room to respond to these allegations. But just the fact that you're calling it a war room, like, it's really, these guys really, and I said it in my little blog thing I do on my Facebook page, The Kitchen Report, I refer to it as a silent coup. Because what it seems like they're trying to do, and I've been, you know, you guys know I say this almost every week, that they're trying to put enough people in place that are going to agree with their agenda, agree with everything they say. You know, Trump has that loyalty thing, so he fires these people that, you know, fired Comey, was investigating him, fired him, gives all of his communications people hell because they're not representing him the right way. As he sells them down the river, that probably sets them up to say, or tell them to say one thing, he says another, and trying to corral the other two heads of the intelligence agencies into trashing Comey. So all of these efforts that you see that they're trying to do, that's why I keep saying it's a race. If they can get enough of their people in place to continue their plan, to squash the investigations, to squash the questions being answered, they don't even want to do press conferences anymore. He didn't even do a press conference when he was abroad. Most presidents, when they travel abroad, they'll do a press conference with the American press, right? This guy doesn't even do that. He doesn't want to answer to anybody. This is what they're trying to put in, a silent coup. And that just really made it clear to me, Jared Kushner trying to open up a back channel with the Kremlin, with the guy who they call the banker, who's kind of one of the shadier of these individuals. And this guy suggests that we have a direct line to them. And now you have McMasters and all these other people kind of making up as they go along, or kind of, you know, downplaying the severity of this thing. And that's why I talk about it's a coup. They're going to see who's down with them to continue on their little charade and lie, and who's not, and whoever has any opposition or wants to raise a question about what they're doing and goes against the Trump agenda, then they're going to have a problem with that. And like I said, I say that the Trump agenda, the American agenda, is in good shape as long as it's in tune and in line with the Trump agenda. And once the Trump agenda and the American agenda are no longer the same, it's going to be even worse.
Well, it's going to come back to haunt them. I don't think they're getting away with anything. They're trying to. And he admittedly said during his world tour that he was going to cut down on press conferences and things like that. And I'm at a point where I actually have some sympathy for Sean Spicer. What this man has to go through on a daily basis, I hope he gets paid well for what he does, you know? Because I just think that's an embarrassment, you know. I mean, it's sad what goes on there, you know.
You can see it in his face.
What's going on with our senator from New Jersey, Mr. Cory Booker? You know, he's either hot and cold. He's gotten support from the Trump family, I understand, and now it seems like he's that's the latest I've been reading in the social media world is that. Is he or is he not getting funding from Kushner and the Trump family? If so, he's kind of gotten cool recently. What's up with Mr. Cory Booker?
Maybe he is and maybe he isn't, because he hasn't had the best reputation, you know, when he was, you know, advertising. Wasn't when he was setting up his political career here in Newark, New Jersey.
Yes.
Out of state, you know, he didn't fit in. And who knows? And now he's fit in, but he's still a little shaky to me. He may be doing well.
Yeah.
I guess we have in order to find out exactly which direction he's really going in.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's
one of those Teflon brothers.
Let me just put a brief correction. Cory Booker was from out of the city of Newark. He's from the state of New Jersey. He grew up in New Jersey.
Right.
Okay.
He's out of the Essex County in the city of Newark, and that's how he came in. Mm-hmm. But I think he's been doing okay. That's new to me. I haven't heard anything about what you're referencing, Byron. That's the first
okay.
I heard about it. So I can't really comment about any of that. That's
well, we have to watch him.
It.
We have to watch him closely.
I would not be surprised if in the past they have come across and they have probably donated to him. I don't know about recently within the last presidential election or two. Maybe so. But like I said, that's news to me. I haven't heard anything about that. And so I'm not really going to comment on that. What I do want to comment on is that, our president overseas seemed to ruffle a lot of people's feathers, both literally and figuratively. You know, I'm talking about when he pushed the president of Montenegro out of the way.
Oh, please,
and,
God.
You know, scolded everybody that they need to pay up for NATO. And just, you know, the guy gives rebirth to the phrase ugly American, you know. He's really kind of, you know, it's just his whole style. I mean, the handshake, arm wrestle, Indian wrestle that he was trying to do with the French president there, you know, do the macho thing. It's interesting though, when he was president-elect and he came to the White House, if you remember, he could barely look Barack Obama in the eye, if you remember that. And he just sat there real sheepish, looking down at the floor. And I guess because Barack peeped him, it was like, what was all the trash you were talking? So, and it's interesting now that around these other world leaders how he tries to have this bravado. And I guess the French president really was not that impressed and wanted to let Mr. Trump know, and also let Putin know the other day at their joint press conference what he really thought. Your thoughts, anybody?
Well,
I
don't know what more to say. His behavior speaks for itself. This man is really dumbing down the American image around the world, and that's it. I mean, just tonight he's talking about pulling out of the Paris Accords, and, you know, it's just embarrassing. I mean, I understand the whole thing with Kathy Griffin and the uproar behind it, but I would take great pleasure in just seeing this man, you know, removed through the process, the governmental process, and knowing that his ego would be so bruised by having lost power, you know, once they find that smoking gun, that's it, you know. It's not about wanting to harm him or harm anyone physically, but getting back to what you were saying, Eric, I just think it's an embarrassment.
Hmm. Anyway, where are we?
He just is just not the answer abroad. And also now that they're back here now, I think they're going to start trying to cut down on some of the press conferences, and certainly not even want to do audio press conferences on camera anymore. We need to be really concentrating on, I heard someone on one of the Talking Head shows talking about, you know, Trump throws these kind of smoke bombs, you know, something that's really not as important. He'll throw the smoke bomb or the issue, you know, like the Kathy Griffin issue is the smoke bomb. Has everybody looking over there? In the meanwhile, they're cutting back on civil rights. You know, Jeff Sessions, the Klansman, is doing his thing, you know, making it harder for black people to vote, thinning out some of these agencies that are responsible for making sure that civil rights and equal rights are being adhered to. And so these are the things that that to me that he's engaging in, the Trump administration is engaging in, while everybody's not looking. These small dismantling a lot of the things that Obama did. Certainly the Paris Accord, and, you know, not wanting to engage in protecting the climate and the earth. It's unbelievable how they can justify these things.
That's the thing. How do you justify it?
Right. Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
We're living at a time when we see how the environment is just falling apart, you know, how just even a simple thing like seafood. I was on City Island earlier today having lunch, and one of the places I go to, the guy at the restaurant was saying that, you know, this is selling fish of any kind is an expensive proposition because each year it's becoming more expensive, unlike other foods. And then you're, you know, faced with this environmental issue, and it doesn't matter whether they're seafood farms to raise these, you know, animals. It's still an issue. You know, it becomes a costly proposition. A lot of restaurants, even just around New York, and I'm certain, Byron, you can attest to that, are closing because of the rents and you know, just...
Yes, they are.
Everything is, you know, is suddenly just being magnified about the impact of what's going on with the economy. And again, you're right, Eric, it's about the smoke and mirrors. I think that they throw out issues, you know, that are really unimportant just to distract from the real issues, and they'll go local, they'll go national. They're politicizing the Puerto Rican Day Parade. I mean, how many times have we seen parades where, you know, of course there's politics involved, but, you know, they're trying to guillotine one of Obama's last acts in terms of granting freedom to a revolutionary. And you can see they're already taking sides, and they're trying to get corporate America to dismantle it. And you know, Puerto Rican people have a right to embrace their heritage and have a day of celebration without it coming to something like that, you know. It's just amazing.
Does, right?
I'm sorry.
That's what the dominant culture does. That's what they
do. Exactly.
They systematically
right.
try to you know, remove the power base, remove the financial base. That's what they do systematically. And perhaps we need to be in positions to do that too, you know, when various organizations or various companies or whatever. You know, I saw the press conference that Felipe Luciano and a couple of other Puerto Rican leaders had, and Felipe said, is it Felipe Luciano used to be with the Young Lords, used to be a reporter?
Uh-huh.
Right. And he said, you know, these companies, they want to pull out and boycott our Puerto Rican Day Parade, then we should boycott these companies.
Exactly.
It's our business that make these companies successful. He's exactly right. You know, their point was like, you know, we don't have any other people tell us who our heroes should be. And if this gentleman that they consider a revolutionary hero, while the dominant culture sees people sees the guy as a terrorist, you know, it needs to be looked into, because the dominant culture has been a culture that has been oppressive of people of color and Native
Americans,
LGBT. Right. People, TQ, whatever, people. After being oppressed, you become a freedom fighter from the oppression. How can you then call that person a terrorist? They
right.
do. Whenever they talk about Timothy McVeigh, revisit that history, they never say the American terrorist. They just say Timothy McVeigh. But he was a terrorist.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
They don't say anything about these cops killing these guys, these terrorist cops. The one who got off because he got fired for killing Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old boy. That's a terrorist act.
Yeah, whatever happened to that?
He got fired. The guy got fired.
And you're right. And this being the anniversary of, let's not ever forget, the historic importance of the Tulsa race riots of 1921, where this is that anniversary date, the country's worst domestic terrorist event ever. They dropped bombs on a black community in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, and where white racism destroyed the richest black town in America, Greenwood,
right.
Oklahoma. And we should always remember that, because it was as a result of that incident that it was not mentioned again until President Obama's second inauguration, and he eloquently received the few remaining people from that incident and spoke of it as being America's worst domestic terrorist event ever.
Black Wall Street.
Black Wall Street, 1921, Memorial Day.
Memorial Day, 1921. Okay.
That's correct.
Yeah, because,
yes, sir.
Yeah, and then, you know, people want to act, oppress people, keep people down, terrorize people. Then when the people turn around and start using the same tactic, they want to call them people terrorists.
They
called the Black Panthers terrorists too, didn't they? That's how they justified killing Fred Hampton. The terroristic police came in there and killed Fred Hampton, who they called a terrorist, who was just trying to speak up for his people. But that's what the dominant culture, that's what they do. You know, that's why they're so comfortable in calling the Puerto Rican brother a terrorist, who was doing what he needed to do for his people.
I want to tell everybody, you know, that, you know, we've had Bill Katz on the air many times, and I want to recommend his book that I find very, very, very informative, because it's a living documentary of the African-American contribution to American history. And the name of the book is Eyewitness, and I'm recommending it to a lot of the teachers and the people out there who are listening here, who want you to know about the exact happenings to Black people and African Americans in, you know, this country from a very early time. And it's I don't know if you can still get it, but it's like it was a must read for when I was teaching. Okay, and I would also like to give you a number for Dr. Speed, just in case you want to get him as a teacher for running or having to do with, you know, setting up a program at the Y's or either at the, you know, the different parks you go to, and getting an exact program, you know, that he can set up for you, and he really is good, Dr. Speed. And his number to get in touch with him is 973-441-8649. Let me give you that number once again, 973-441-8649. So if you want to call him and have him set up a program, you will have a very good teacher in, you know, running and exercising it. And if he's in his 80s, you should see him. Really great.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm interested. If I could just blow my horn for a second, I had seen my doctor yesterday, and I'm so glad that I've been able to get my sugar levels below pre-diabetes, and I just got to stick with it. You know, it's boring to go out there, but you know, you have to be disciplined. You got to watch what you eat. You got to you know, do the exercises and things like that. And
absolutely,
I've seen what that has done to this community of ours. And you know, I just hope I can just keep it up. That's it. You know.
Well, all you have to do is be disciplined. You need to come over here and see Dr. Speed, brother.
Exactly.
Get out there on the track and run up and round and down on the track with Dr. Speed. And you know, you're right about that. And that's what, you know, I just came from a town hall with the Congressman Payne. Briefly, we were at the town hall that he was holding here in Montclair, and they were talking about Obamacare and affordable care and people moving.
Uh-huh.
One woman was saying we need to move progressively towards single payer, which of course everybody agrees, just getting the votes.
Mm-hmm.
But also what Obama was saying, that, you know, it's an overall approach to help, preventative measures. That's why the First Lady was talking about her Get Moving initiative, Let's Move initiative, and the healthy eating. All of that holistic approach to how one should live and eat is one that directly affects one's health and whether you're going to have disease later on or not. And that's the funny thing about it, because you have the corporations that keep wanting to make unhealthy food. We have our standards and practices, so to speak, for food, for the Food and Drug Administration. You know, they're able to push the limits. These various companies are able to push the limits of what they're able to feed people and pass off as food. And so, you know, when we have a pretty much a capitalistic commerce-driven society, everything else suffers, right? Because then everything is the bottom line about making the money. So we're not really worried about how healthy the food is we're giving people. We just want to have more food, have them get hungrier. You know, people talk about this company Monsanto, who was doing the genetically modified foods, which is
right.
Nutritional value, not as great as natural foods. So, you know, this is why we have people that are not healthy as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, if we need to have that from the beginning to the end, the whole total comprehensive approach
towards health care, which includes diet and staying healthy and a healthy lifestyle, not one that, you know, addresses the problem as a reactionary health system.
Exactly.
And we definitely need to have universal health care. I mean, the United States is supposed to be the greatest country in the world, and we don't have universal health care, which is, you know, again, a testament to the type of capitalist system we under. I mean, you know, we want to make people pay to stay alive. I mean,
mm-hmm.
That's just crazy. Have the medical field to be one that's there for capitalism. I mean, it's great people should be able to make a living from being medical professionals, but I mean, wow. I mean, it's like that pharmaceutical giant that raised the price of that epi needle last year. The guy made it $800 a pop or whatever, and was smug about it and thought that was okay. I mean, we need to make it not okay. Change the mentality in this country, and that it's not okay to get rich off of people's sickness, off of people's illness, off of people's Go ahead, Wayne.
I agree. I mean, if he were faced with a debilitating disease where his life depended on it, I'm certain his perspective would have been entirely different, you know? But, and that's the problem. Everything is about money. Why must it cost us extra to live a healthier lifestyle? And very often the very people who really are in need of something could barely afford it, you know? And it's just one of those things. I agree with what you're saying. You know, this guy had no reason to do what he did, and it's criminal. But he's no different than the other pharmaceuticals out there charging X, Y, and Z dollars for stuff that always you have to listen to a disclaimer at the end of the commercial. It, you know, if you got this condition, it may help you with this, but you'll die from, you know, half a million other things that this same drug will do for you. So, I don't know. It's about proactive and being, it's about preventative medicine, period.
Right. And certainly in our community, I'm sure Byron, you said you're in Florida, maybe in Atlanta also too, but there's certain parts of the country, if you go to certain parts of the country, you will see more people that seem to be out of shape than in other parts of the country. I'm talking about on the two coasts. Usually you'll find that people seem to be a little bit more health conscious than, say, the flyover down south. And the diet,
right?
You know, the obesity epidemic, particularly in our community, in the African-American community, is really something that is out of control. You know, I mean, I can't just it's a daily thing how many people I see that are pretty obese in our community, and the type of food that we eat and the type of food that's available to us is what's making us unhealthy. But we've come.
Yeah.
Do you want to say it, Mom?
No.
We've come to the end of our time here. I will give up Dr. Speed's number again. Yes, I will. All right, do it right now. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Speed. I see it. I want to thank our guest again, Dr. Speed, for Sprint Coach for calling in. Very interesting talking to him. You want to contact Dr. Roosevelt Bo Weaver. Dr. Speed is 973-441-8649 is his number, 973-441-8649. I want to thank you, legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And our co-host for calling in. Thanks to Byron Saunders. I think he hung up. Maybe he's on vacation.
No, I'm still
here. Well, I didn't know you were still there, bro. Take care. All right, we got to go anyway. You were so quiet. I didn't hear you, Byron. Mr. Wayne Gilman, thanks again. We'll see everybody again next week on the Kay Thompson Live Show, 8 to 9 p.m. hour, or you can listen to the show every archive, or you can listen to it every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m., or you can listen to it anytime. I'm Eric Payne, also known as Citizen Payne. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening in. And you are?
I'm Kay Thompson Payne. Thank you for listening in.
All right. The Kay Thompson Live Show, thank you to everybody. Listen to us again next week. We will have another exciting episode. Take care. Bye-bye.